Evening, everyone. It's the Club Racing UK podcast, and we're back with another fun-filled episode. And we've got quite the special guest on today. YouTube star, sensation, Honda Integra racer, hot hatch race winner. Anything else we've missed out, Ben? It's Ben Rushworth, ladies and gentlemen, on the show with us today, with the usual three miscreants that sit and basically talk crap about club racing because we love it so much. So, first of all, we'll start with the introductions while my coffee is delivered to me. Thank you very much, Emma. We have Nick Holmes and Stephen Marsh.
Every time.
You're like a superstar now, Rob. Look at this.
Service on the go, what can I say? So, I am Rob.
Tell me about it.
The gentlemen above me, and they certainly are gentlemen. We have Nick Holmes and Stephen Marsh. How are we doing, chaps?
Yeah, I'm all good this end, mate. First episode where I haven't been sent out to me van. I'm well happy.
That's fantastic. It suits you, mate. That's quite a background.
Instead, I'm sat in somebody else's shed. Slight upgrade.
Ben Rushworth, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm good this evening. How are you?
Oh, fantastic, mate. It's good to have you on the show.
Pleasure to be here.
It's going to be a laugh. It's certainly gone down well when we told everyone that you were on. It's probably our most popular one so far. So, no pressure.
No pressure, Ben. There's a big audience after you.
Oh, right.
Okay. The one thing I will say, just doing a brief introduction, we're not actually doing a full racing roundup this week because there's been so much racing on for the past 2 weeks. We'd be here for literally hours. Just going through it all and dissecting it all. So we're giving it a bit of a miss this week. Stefan's disappeared already. Oh, he's back. Okay, he's back.
A quick toilet break.
Yeah, it was a very quick toilet break. This.
He's getting good at these.
Sky is always.
Sky Broadbands. Okay.
Oh,
yeah, we've been there before, mate.
Old news, I know, but it's always one of us.
Yeah, what broadband are you on, Stephen?
Me?
Yeah.
Just my data. It's faster than the Wi-Fi I got at home, which is kind of ridiculous. I can upload videos off my phone in about 15 minutes or 8 hours on the Wi-Fi.
Or do what Nick has to do and buy a bolt-on. Okay, I move on. There's a slight bit of solemn news for the first part of the news today, but I felt it's something we had to include. Tragically, we lost Ryan Lowry, one of the co-coordinators for the Calm Porsche Trophy, in tragic circumstances earlier in the year. His family have got together, Danny Lowry, and they organised the 100 kilometres cycle to Alton Park recently, where they held the round at Alton there. They did put a post up. So as someone whose inclination to help others extended from around a race paddock to volunteering and charity work elsewhere, Ryan's family and friends were following suit by raising money to help 100 families. Next week, the week just gone, they will undertake a 100-kilometre bike ride from his home in Marple on the 4th of September, ending at Alton Park on the 5th, Ryan's birthday, and the same day as the 750 Motor Club meeting that was carried out. Although circuit number restrictions meant that the large cycle party couldn't get involved on site on arrival, there wasn't loads of people gathered around them, as you can expect. Mm. You can still offer your support to their Just Giving page. And at 7:30, I checked the Just Giving page. $12,500 they've raised.
Awesome.
Their target was $6,000. That's fantastic. And they're still accepting donations. So if you do go to Just Giving, it's under Danny Lowry, Danny's 100 for 100 Families page. Fantastic charity to go towards. And again, our heart goes out to Ryan Lowry's family. He was a good guy.
Definitely. We'll put a link up at the end of this as well. So
we will do.
No excuses for not finding it.
Right. Next thing, I have to apologise because I don't believe I sent Ian a picture of the link. However, it was brought to my attention from you, Nicholas, of a certain post from PDC Racing at Anglesey, the classic stock hatch.
Yes. Yeah.
So they went out testing on the Friday. Car broke down, and there was a photo that came up of about four or five separate teams helping to get the car out on the grid. So that's always something to see.
Awesome. Yeah, it was good. Like I say, it just summed up club racing, didn't it? You had all the teams in the garage. I think it was one of the 205s, wasn't it? One of the classic stock hatch 205s. Yeah. And just all the teams balls deep in getting it ready for the next race. It was brilliant. It was good.
There's nothing wrong with There's nothing wrong with going balls deep. I mean, to be fair, the 750 Motor Club sort of paddock does look quite friendly and well put. I mean, there's only one person here that's racing the 750 Motor Club. So, what would you say, Ben?
I can attest to that. It's a very well run club. They cram so much in, and the fact that they're able to do what they do is actually quite impressive when you realise there's only there's three headless chickens running around trying to keep it all. Or the schedule, but the paddocks themselves, you know, as with everything, you tend to stick mostly with your own championship or series or whatever. But you know, I've never had any real kerfuffles with anyone there, and I'm always up for the kerfuffle, so I guess that says quite a lot about the people there.
we've seen the evidence.
I don't mind.
We're going to come to that quite later on, Ben. You're going to tell us a lot of your antics over the years. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too.
another brief
round-up. To be fair, on the 750 subject, we're going to find out this weekend just how good their paddock is.
Yes, very good. Yes. We were going to say later on the show, but this weekend, Nick is going to be let loose in a 116 car. So
we'll see. I cannot wait. Finally get to go racing again. It's going to be good.
So then, talking of BMWs, Graham Crowhurst bounced back from his Brands crash 3 weeks ago, got the car repaired and came out with a double M2 class win at Alton Park in the BMW CCR. I couldn't see the car on track in its camo livery. That's
just a floating wing.
A floating wing and a driver sat on his own. I couldn't believe it. But I quite enjoyed the coverage on Alpha Live. There was a lot of accidents, unfortunately, that I saw. A bit of carnage. But then there was a video that was put up on the internet, wasn't there, Nick and Steph? Did you get a chance? Area Motorsport put a clip up of their side of the story of quite a nasty prang in the club enduro. Have all of you managed to see the onboard, and what do you think?
No, but, you know. No, I'm just joking.
Are we allowed an opinion on a move in Cascades?
You guys probably aren't, because you're all your professional.
Of course, we're allowed an opinion into Cascade, Steph. I mean, yeah. No, I mean, I got to see the video footage again. You didn't get to see it from the TCR car, but I think it was pretty clear from the Civic that, I mean, it was a racing incident. I don't think anyone was at fault. It was just two cars absolutely on it, heading down to a very narrow part of the circuit. And I think they just tripped over each other, if I'm completely honest, but.
Without
seeing the TCR footage, you definitely can't point your finger at anyone. I mean, you can see from the Area Motorsport guys that the guy behind the wheel of the Civic, he didn't change where he was going. So unless the image from the TCR car is him steering into him, it's going to be a racing incident. He wouldn't be the first people to trip up over there. Wouldn't be the last.
That point we made a few weeks ago about is how necessary is contact and going that extreme through corners.
Racing room.
Yeah. One of those points where it was a bit more, necessary to go that close? Could you give it a bit more room? What are you losing from
it? That's it. I mean, you can't see how much of the track the TCR car had from the Civic Cup but a lot of people did make the fair comment that, to be fair, the TCR car had the inside line for the left-hander. So if he just stuck at it, it was his position still, and the Civic would have had to have another bite at it. But it unfortunately ended up with, I think it was two DNFs, wasn't it? Definitely one DNF, because the car was upside down. But
it was a club enduro race. Civic retired as well, but I think it was the second or third lap of a two-hour race. It was a bit like, come on, chaps.
It's tricky because I know everyone tries to be quite nice, and in club racing, you don't want any context. Certainly don't want any context on your car. But I think some of the guys, depends what level you're operating at. I mean, I don't want to start throwing too much around and stuff, but you could tend to be a bit more careful, a bit more wary if you're in the 16th position. But that kind of goes out the window when it's second or third.
Yeah.
Keep with that in mind, there's usually an operating standard that I can tend to operate under. And now, center is no, this could, I'm going to piss off more people here, but center is no idol of mine.
carry on.
But in certain overtakes, you're always waiting for the moment someone makes a mistake. And the mistake might be so small as to just holding in a turning point, fraction of a second. Because if you're dicing with three people, he might be looking to take an alternative line to overtake someone else. But the moment he makes that move and you spot an angle change in their wheels going into a corner, you can sometimes just jump right in there. Now, you don't think what's going to happen on the exit side, but once you've got up to someone to a point, either door handle, door to door handle, or you're a nudge in front and you're on the inside, in my opinion, it becomes entirely the other person's responsibility to back out of the accident. Now, that's going to sound ridiculous because, you know, you're putting all the weight on someone else, but at a certain point, the guy who's on the inside is going to power through the corner. He's not going to hug the inside because he's just stolen the inside.
No.
And you've got to think, okay, now I've either got to run into the grass or have contact or just back out and give it another go somewhere else. Now, that doesn't always work out because people in the moment throw a big FU out and contact happens. But in my opinion, 90% of the time, the responsibility does come down to one person and they just have to make a very quick decision, which is hard to make, but that's kind of the way that I operate. I sort of like stick it in there and I go, well, your choice, mate. Are we having contact's not usually big, it's usually just a nudge or something or rub or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like another person's choice to have it once you've got a nose in front sort of thing. There is more nuances to that, but you know, in the general principle of things, I think you can kind of operate that sort of level.
I think the other thing as well is it's not like these cards just suddenly appear out of nowhere, do they? You know you're battling with someone, so if you know they've sent it, you know they're there. You definitely know they're there.
It's just people getting pissed off and saying, "No, sir," and decide to say like, "I don't like your livery. I'm going to take half of it off," or something like that. But it's part of the game, and I think I started off and I was like, nope, never rubbing, never. I hate people who push the pass, I hate people who rub, I hate people who bring the BTCC ethic into things because the club racing just can't afford it. Some people can, and they take away with it because they can. But I was always along the lines when I first started, I'm never going to rub wheels with anyone, I'm too much of a gentleman. But now I'm sort of like, you know.
You're a superstar racer.
No, I don't think so. But I just gets a bit more serious. You know, when more effort you put into it, the result becomes more important to you.
Yeah.
I think you hinge it all off. Maybe spend
What's a few tents?
Yeah, exactly. What is a few tents? You know, if someone gets pissed off, I can apologize with the best of them. I can apologize so hard the guy will feel guilty for getting angry at me. But
It's racing, isn't it? It is.
I think, to be honest, it's a bit the level of club racing as well, maybe. I mean, we'll get onto that because we asked the question, what is club racing? And it's the different levels of club racing, which kind of what this episode is going to be about. There's an article that was in Autosport that a lot of people would have seen by now. Myself and Nick sort of looked at it and thought, huh? So, but we'll come on to that later. Just quickly, we'll brush on some comments. Paul Harvey, most popular guest. I resent that. Sorry, Paul. He was pretty popular, but I'll tell you Paul Harvey was up there as well. Don't you worry about that.
And to be fair, he had a professional lighting rig, so I thought that was brilliant.
he had a full podcast set up on the go. Didn't just use a phone.
I think he did, and again, he as well as Stefan, he brought sex appeal to the show. Frank Frostick, normally I say, look at you, lovely lot. This time I say, look at this motley crew. He's not wrong there.
Definitely not.
Cameron Tunio says, rubbing is racing, chaps. There was room for both, though. Yeah.
Rub it here, yeah.
Yeah, again, depends on the level of club racing and what happens to each other's car. Again, we'll get onto that later. Nick Winnick says hello. He did rather well at Castle Coombe last weekend.
He did, and he features on the list we're going to be talking about.
He does. He does.
Yeah.
He does. Talking about... Say again, Ben.
Is that why you're so upset about the list? Because Nick's on it.
No, not me. Nick Winnick's on there, not me.
1.2 clear, whatever he pretends it is.
Yeah, I think it's rapid.
Yeah, some of those Cleo's.
Yeah.
God's sake, so go on, say Nick.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I was just, Ben, you have you had some dices with Nick before? Have you in that Cleo? I think you have, haven't you?
No, no, no. I used to mess around in the Renault scene and stuff, so like, I always keep an eye on what the Renault's doing
now. Ah, okay.
I've got a bit of an old journey for Cleos and stuff. I
grew up. God, dear. That's a bit of a terrible rap sheet, isn't it? You used to play with Renaults and now you play with Hondas.
Yeah, only the finest. Only the finest. I do dibble dabble with crap Ferraris and Porsches every now and then. But...
Oh, do you what? I've been watching this with intent recently, and I love the shit you give these cars.
Yeah, you say you think a Frenchman builds a car bad? You talking to the Italians? Jesus Christ!
Oh no. Me and Steph know from experience that Italians can't make shit.
They build it like this. We build the car like this.
Yeah, the car like it is.
And that's us taking off the air. Yeah. So talking about Castle Coombe, Gary Preble stormed to 4 race victories. He took his Honda Civic out in hot hatch and blazed away in that. He took his, there we go, the Seat Leon out in saloons and absolutely blazed it. It's got a bit of a smoking problem there, as you can see, but...
I love that picture.
That's a fantastic car, that.
That's a, I believe that's a sepia photo picture as well. We featured last week on our show as well. So, yeah, cracking picture. Look at that.
There we go. And there's this Honda Civic. Now, that Honda Civic, I believe, Ben, you raced against a few times last year, did you not?
Yeah.
Ben didn't race with anyone, but was just Steve Sawley, wasn't it? I think that's the only person I ever see you racing.
Yeah, Steve's a quick boy. Steve's. I hope he's listening, or some of his mates are listening. But Steve's an old boy, but isn't he fucking quick? Yeah, he's good. It's because he used to race bikes, so he's got no fear.
Oh right.
Yeah, but he's good. He's probably one of the best guys I've raced against, because we do have the odd nudge. But you know, we've never ever swung punches at each other, nor really got pissed off at each other, except because we give each other room, and sometimes we do have contact because we are going for it. But you know, I implicitly trust Steve. No problem. He's top. He's the baller. Yeah. Good.
That's one way to put it, isn't it?
Yeah.
A quick shout out as well to Slipper Grip Automotive, Ross Parker. He finally got back on track in his EF Civic.
Yes.
Well, 7th and 8th overall, looking at the TSL timings there. So well done, Ross.
Yeah. And that's a fresh build. That's a freshly built car, that. I love that.
Yeah, fresher than Will Smith. A bit of an ambassador alert as well. Mike Bland was out in Castle Coombe hot hatch, 39 car grid. Absolutely massive. 17th and 15th. There we go. Look at that queue of cars.
There it is. Definitely, that was good.
Beautiful.
It just, I like a varied grid like that. You've literally got mini Peugeot, bigger, fatter Peugeot, but you know, it's still Peugeot, and Ford Puma. But yeah, again, 39 Ford, car grid Ford. With that lot whizzing around, you're going to race with someone.
And yeah, Ford at the back.
Hey!
Was racing in it. It was only, he's still got his novice stickers, and I know him because he comes and pesters me in paddocks every now and then. Mechanicking for BS Motorsport, the MX5s lot. Anyway, he started racing. Yeah. He did quite well because it was like his third race or something like that. And to be honest, his car's crap. Well, he did. Hustling with some of the more established names in there. So well done, Will, yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, awesome.
As well, I see. And Coop TV with the live feed all day. Top job, Chris Dawes and the team. Again,
yeah.
We've seen Alpha Live, Coombe TV have sort of got theirs in. So it's, again, streaming is the future. We said it in an earlier episode. Live streaming is the future. Television's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think television's dead, but yeah, when you can get it on the phone and stuff that we're using right now, you know, when it's literally in the palm of your hand, what's not to like?
Well, club racing was never really on TV, was it? You had Motors TV, but if you ever looked at the viewing figures for it,
oh yeah, four people were up at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was about it.
Even if you had prime time slot, I think the best I've ever seen on there was like 14,000 people, which, you know, your local radio gets, your local Christian radio gets more than that. So,
yeah, I love it.
Fantastic. And I will make sure I tune into my local Christian radio station in the future. Back to some comments. Ben Neil Robinson has tuned in on his drive back from Kent to Scotland. That's a long old bloody drive. Before making the return trip on Saturday, I know he's got time attack at Brands at the weekend. Maybe in the Noble, maybe in the Gulf. He did test it earlier in the week. A few teething issues, but I'm sure he'll be back out. He says, hello, everyone. So glad this is going on. I've been counting down the days. Nick Gwinnett has replied to Ben Rushworth and says, play nicely, it's a DCI. Jonathan Bevan. Now, this may be quite a famous name to a lot of people. His grandfather being George Bevan, that built those absolutely rapid cars in the British touring cars in the 70s. Mainly Hillman Imps, I believe it was. Evening all, true club racing is a man in his garage building his car. We've been club racing since 1965 and still going today. You would thought he would stop for a break, even a tea break, but, you know, they've still been going.
Yeah. That's dedication.
Martin Cully, although not club racing, what is the view on contact in motorsports? And he's also says Sergio Perez is leaving Racing Point. I did see that earlier on. That'll be Vettel. Yeah, that'll be Vettel going straight in there then, I'm sure.
That's definitely not club racing.
Definitely not club racing. Yeah,
get rid of that. What was the best race this season or probably last season? The last one, though.
You say that, right? Let me just have just a little snippet of F1. The way everyone was going off about it being, an amazing race, I was expecting to see cars explode.
No. Stop, Nick. Stop. You have to watch the rest of the races to realise how boring they were to figure out how good this one was.
But just because you have a semi-interesting race, it doesn't mean it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, but it is for Formula One.
For Formula One, the only thing I liked about the F1 is the fact. Did you see that Finnish bloke that put a 20 cents bet on that on the podium?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Walked away. And he got
€33,000 return. Fucking yes.
Yeah, I think it was the odds were one in because he had to get the exact podium, didn't he?
Yeah, so I think it was 106. I think it was 166. 1,990 to 1, I think it was. Something like that. And it came in. Fucking fair play.
Fantastic. Okay, so we've covered a bit of the roundup. Like I said, it's been a bit Billy Basic this week. If you have been racing in the past few weeks and you want to get your 2 cents in, do message us now at the Club Racing UK or my supercar pages. Few more comments. Jack Ashton, I assume, talking about the contact with the Euro Cup car or stay on the outside and have a better exit. I don't believe you should back out if you're on the outside.
He's now a sim racer, isn't he? He knows all about massive contact.
Jack Ashton. I wouldn't know.
I used to race against him in the Metros. If it is the same Jack Ashton we're talking about. The old purple helmet. That's not his personal name, that's his team name.
you say that, Ben, but I think we've actually got some footage of him this weekend, which we will come to shortly. Patrick Seale, absolutely right. At some point, someone has to give it up, and if neither do, then an accident is going to happen.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's all about pride, isn't it?
Okay.
If it's the last lap, then go for it. But if you're two laps into a two-hour race,
back out.
Jack Ashton then replied to Patrick Seale, why should an accident happen if both drivers give racing room?
True.
Say, lap, final lap, different issue. Lap two, then.
I was going to say if it's the final lap at Bathurst for the lead, versus racing with your mate on a Sunday at Brands Hatch when it's pissing down with rain and you're fighting for 20th.
Yeah, exactly.
It's slightly different.
Scalable, yeah, it's scalable, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Matthew Howarth has commented, Ben, were you rubbing the chevron in the Gold Cup? What happened?
Spent freaking 3 months rebuilding that thing with pouring level over it, and everyone else hated me because they never saw me. And then it was mint. In the race, quali was rubbish. Pulled out for quali after a test where it ran spot on. Pull out to quali, go through the assembly area. New brakes, none whatsoever. I was like, oh, great, typical. But it just turned out to be a vacuum in the reservoir holding it was pulling the pistons out, which is like something I've never ever seen before in my life. But anyway, fixed that. But didn't get a good quali because of it. But in the race, it was mint. We went from 10th to 3rd in 4 or 5 laps or something. The thing was screaming. The first flying lap I had, it was like on the pace with Andy Newell, you know, ex-JCB factory driver. So, like,
yeah,
I was swinging my dick everywhere, being pretty happy about that. And then the rear up got pretty hot, and just the wheel bearings went sloppy in the upright. So the rear wheel started shimmying and pointing in all sorts of weird directions, and the car was vibrating its tits off. Like I was like watching through vibrovision. I was talking like I was talking to a fan, and just it was horrible. So I was going around, my lap times dropped crazy, and I was just going around, and I'm like, I've just rebuilt this thing, doesn't belong to me, costs a fortune, and I'm about to put it in a wall. So I came to bits 3 times, and I was the guy, Joe, who was running me, I was actually looking at him. I was like, please tell me to turn the fucking car off. I want to stop. If you don't tell me to stop, but, you know, you need to tell me to stop. So he told me to turn off, and that was, unfortunately. But it would have been a good race. I think we would have been on for definitely a podium.
Ah, oh, good man.
You'll be back, I'm sure, Ben. Don't worry about that.
Yep.
Up to the producers of our wonderful podcast, My Supercar. They've been a bit busy, and I know that
they're Steph, always bloody busy.
Yeah, they are always busy. Unfortunately,
big cars now.
Yeah. Now you may not like one of the images that came up because they did cover the 2CV 24 hours amongst other things. So we've got some footage in the background of the 2CVs. Can we play it, please?
I'm joking.
So huge congratulations there. Wow, magnificent stuff. I'm so sorry. 21 cars started 5:30 yesterday afternoon. 21 cars are in Parc Fermé. They have finished. The race is done. Wingrove are your outright race winners. Wow. Zlaki Malarkey are your mini class winners. So fantastic. Congratulations to those guys. And the 2CV Line 1 team are your club class winners as well.
So there we go. What we had there was a nice description and video replays of the 2CV 24 hours at Snedston. That's for our audio clips later on, so everyone can actually understand what they're listening to in the background.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, the one thing I did notice, the grids are down in the 2CVs. There was sort of half minis, half 2CVs. They're getting a bit old in the tooth now. And
What was the deal with that? Why were the minis there? Were they just, like, making up numbers? Because there wasn't many minis.
The minis have been there for years. The minis were there when I raced it. And it was something that they wanted to start up. So it's sort of like very Billy Basic 1,000cc engine, same sort of thing as the 2CVs. But for some reason, they weren't allowed to sort of build loads of minis to come in, like when the C1s started to get built and came into the 2CVs. They were very quickly ushered off, right, go and do your own thing.
Fair enough.
And again, with the 2CVs, they're so the engineering on them is weird. It's difficult to get parts. So, unfortunately, I think the grids overall are a bit down.
Well done, though. I mean, 21 cars starting and 21 cars finishing. 24 hours around a very wet Snetterton again.
Yeah,
What is wrong with that track?
I just wanted to jump in with regards to the 2CVs as well. Don't forget, they were about six or seven teams down as well, because for the 24-hour race, they have teams come over from Belgium and France, and they couldn't get over.
There was a lockdown.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, you have the Europeans that come over as well.
Gone.
There we go. He was here and now he is gone. That was Ian Waterhouse, ladies and gentlemen. But, yeah, the Europeans as well.
Just comes and goes as he pleases now, does he?
that's what happens when you're a celebrity. It is what it is. But we've got something now that should please Ben, because let's be honest, this is where you started, wasn't it? The MG Metro Cup.
It was, yeah. Fantastic series.
Right, we should have some clips coming up. So we got the Metros. Oh, okay, Nick.
No.
Right, hello everybody. Good afternoon. Well, good evening almost, isn't it? And welcome to Snetterton. It's almost time for the Drayton Manor. And whoa, Drayton Manor. MG Metro Cup. Before we do, we've got a little surprise come round. Look at these monsters around here. Here we go. Look at that. What a view we've got for you right here. What a wonderful sight this is, isn't it? We've got plenty of action.
Hey.
I love the fact he pops his head around. Look at these monsters. Tiny little empties.
We will come back to you, Ben, actually, because we'll ask about the MG Metros later on when we sort of chat and ask more about yourself. We've also got some footage now from the MG Trophy and the BC V8s.
Good morning, Jack. How you doing, buddy? You all right?
Yeah, good, man. Looking forward to this one.
I hope so. Look, Donington Park, right? Race two. You had a problem, but you just about managed to hold on. Obviously, race one, we know you had to retire from. Cars in good nick today? Confident?
I'm confident with it, yeah. Couple of gearbox issues as well at the moment. I'm just going to take it easy. Qualifying's a sort of tester. It's going to be tricky. I've got a problem selecting the fifth gate. So all the other gears, fine. Just getting into fifth. I don't want to end up going in the third instead of fifth. We'll see what happens. But I see only the one little thing in the back of my head. But everything else, I'm looking forward to it. Great track. Can't wait.
We're going to find out about 20 minutes, aren't we? Cheers, Jack. Thanks, mate. Jack Ashton, of course, winner at Donington Park. And Mike Williams, the other winner at Donington Park. So, Mike.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy? You all right?
I'm all right, thank you.
Look, Donington Park was exciting, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
You're a race winner. Snetterton, what are we expecting this weekend?
I think the Tomcat's going to be closer today, obviously, because of the straight line speed. So, let's see. I don't know. I think Jack and I will battle it quite hard. But whether that's first place, second place, or third place, or whatever, we don't know, do we? So we're fairly matched driver ability wise, and car wise they're almost identical. So as you saw at Donington, when they're both working, then the racing's good. So like I say, I don't know whether we'll be in the lead because of the straight line speed of the Tomcats or what, but we'll be having fun, won't we, Jack? Yep.
Fantastic. Look, we're going to keep a sharp eye on it. Best of luck. So it looks like Mike Williams is still in the lead. He's managed to hold. Jack, oh, he's gone wide. Mike Williams has gone off the track. Mike Williams has gone off the track. He's still, he's come back on in second place. But Jack Ashton flies through. Williams runs wide round Palmer, off, kicks up the dirt. And Jack Ashton takes the lead of this race. Magnificent stuff. It is Ashton, but Williams is closing the gap. Williams is again fastest man round that time with 2:16.479, just 1.3. There they go. Mike Williams takes the lead of this race from Jack Ashton. They are running 1 and two. And Mike Williams wins the second race of the... Wow, drama. I'm hearing huge drama here. Massive, massive. Mike Williams, race winner. Not anymore. He's been handed a five-second penalty for exceeding track limits. Jack Ashton has been handed the win. Jack Ashton is your winner. Mike.
How are we doing, Ian?
I'm good, mate. How are you, more importantly? Because you crossed the line in first, but as you know...
Yeah, they've penalised me, unfortunately. To be fair.
Was it fair?
Well, it is, because I've got to be honest. I don't think I was on the circuit at all, to be honest.
We caught it on camera.
I was rallycross.
All four wheels were off.
But whatever was bouncing this morning.
Wasn't that penalty enough, though? Because you lost the lead because of it, so...
Well, that's just how it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's racing. Look, at the end of the day, Jack and I went out there and we had a fantastic time.
I'm pleased you got
so that's really all that matters, because I have to be completely honest. The back end of the car, I don't know what is wrong with it, but every time I braked and I was going into a corner, it just went. But what fun I've had with it. By the time I got used to it after a bit, and I was like, right, bait, turn, straighten, power all the way through, and it was just bouncing around the corner. And by the time I got used to it,
yeah,
I got enough to obviously catch up with Jack then and get past him. But the downside of that is keeping a car on the road with an arse end like that is just, yeah, well, it's impossible.
Congratulations, sharing the love. There you go, and here he is. Jack, congratulations. You got the race win in the end.
What a mad race.
What a great race.
Can I just say, Mike's, you know what, must be so big that it must weigh the car down. Because I've never seen him drive that like that before. He was pushing that every limit of the way, and hence why he probably got a bit of the penalty in the end, because he just pushing the boundaries everywhere. But it plays in my favour. The tyres ran out a little after about five laps, and it was just trying to hold him off from there. Yeah. But I could see him coming. Yeah. But yeah, it was a great race from that. I'm glad to get back out on the race.
Thank you for the entertainment. It's been great. Don't overheat, Jack. Congratulations. Well done, mate. There we go, Jack Ashton, your race winner. Well, that was an absolute thriller, wasn't it? But look, Mike Williams, despite getting a penalty, he don't care. He's just had a great, great day. And like you said, he actually won race one. Jack Ashton wasn't in race one, and he won it relatively at a canter. He was just nursing the car, really. But he preferred that one, and he didn't even win it. He just said he had so much fun, and that's what club racing is all about. That's it from us here at Snetterton. That is the MG Cup, supported by Peter Best Insurance. What a day's racing we've had. I've been Ian Waterhouse. I really hope you've enjoyed all of the action. Until next time, drive safely.
There we go. So
I loved it. That was awesome. Well done, boys.
So I think Ian Waterhouse covered that quite well there. That was the MG sort of Metro Cup mixed in with the overall MG Cup there. So Phil Lee,
you can kind of, you see the little skip in his step.
Yeah,
Philip
Lee commented of Pescara Productions commented, underrated series that also seems to be dropping in numbers, sadly. Metros haven't gone that silly cost-wise, have they? I wouldn't know. I don't know if you keep up to date with it, Ben, or...
Yeah, I do. I watch it, and the rules haven't changed since the last major rule change. They were actually racing the MG Cups. They both got the larger 1800s in versus the standard 1400s you had to run in the Metro Cup. But costs-wise, you can go mental, as with anything, you can, especially consumable-wise, but... I was doing a whole season on one set of tyres, and the thing uses like 12 quid worth of fuel for a race, and you know, engines come out of scrapyards. It's proper club racing, because the things are so cheap. It's a bit more difficult now, because finding a rust-free Metro must be quite difficult, or a problem with it. But it really isn't. I think you could build a proper car for anywhere between 3.5 minimum to about 6 if you're really, really spunking the cash around. But yeah, it's a great series. I don't know why the numbers are dropping, because, well, I kind of do know why, because people keep coming out with more and more useless new series, chasing the new businesses, you know, the new cheaper series and stuff like this new, what's that, the city car thingy? Like, you know, none of this credits people who have done it, but what is the point of that series? It's like, we've got so many cheap series that have been in existence for so long and so established, we don't need another series that costs 6 grand for a brand new car to go that fucking slowly. Sorry.
this is what I wanted to point out with you, Ben, because I know you were quite vocal about the KAs when they first came out, and obviously we do the KAs. I thought it was quite funny and a little bit hypocritical. Obviously, you were in the Metro Cup one make series, and then we're in the KAs.
Nothing wrong with one make series. There's nothing wrong with cheap motor racing. There's nothing wrong with a car that costs $5,000 to build and go racing. That's what is needed. But we don't need 42 championships of that same formula. You need 10 where people can go and grow. And otherwise, you just get pot hunters. And that's one of my gripes with club racing is the pot hunter who moves the next 100% to go get the easiest pot. And you just get a good championship now might have 3 really shit hot drivers in sprinkled across 10 championships. Whereas you can have one championship with 15 shit hot drivers in all going proper door to door. 3 people running away the front of every single championship all the time.
We've mentioned this in the past, haven't we, Rob, Steph, talking about the dilution of series. And we 100% agree with you on that one, Ben. Just definitely.
Unfortunately, as we pointed out before, the MSA kind of have their hands tied because of this whole competition thing. So they can't be seen to be blocking one club from doing one thing and saying you can't do that because their hands are tied from a legal standpoint, because they could turn around and go, well, you're just stopping it because they've got it, and it's not fair. Yeah. And throwing toys out of the
park. But we kind of have said that kind of needs that. So, the series is that have got tiny numbers, but there's other championships available. They do need to be just said, look, you're not running that series. If you want a race, go over there.
I mean, I think it's good. Clubs as well, isn't it? I mean, they let it happen. I mean, I know someone's going to come up with the idea, propose it to the club, and they got to let them in. But, they don't have to let every single thing in the whole time. I mean, there's too much club racing.
There's never enough club racing.
To be fair, you've got a point there. Jonathan Bevan agrees with Ben. Too many championships with combined grids to make up the numbers. Philip Lee comments, I think this is sarcasm, but Ben, we need BARC's 800th Open Series with 6 entries. We need it.
He's got a real penchant for Bach. I know, secretly down in the bottom of his heart, he sits at home longingly wishing he was part of that step. But I was at Brandswell, and I watched a scheduled race happen with 2 cars in it.
I remember that last year. It was last year.
I thought it was 2 guys qualifying at a session. So no one was watching. I thought, it's just guys missed their qualifying. They're going to go next race. No. The commentator's like, he's in the lead. I'm like, there's only 2 fucking cars. You only got 2 options. So surprised they let it run. It was a piss take, really.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, whether it's Bark, whether it's BRSCC, MSV, everyone's in the same sort of pot. That eventually, those grid spaces need to be filled. And if you're not bringing that many cars to the table, eventually the pot's going to run out, and you're going to get canned.
Yeah.
The problem is, it takes 2 or 3 seasons of the damage being done for that to happen, which is unfortunate. So. Whether the MSA changes their views on things soon, whether they can, it's one of those. So I move on, gents, because Nick, we noticed something about the latest Autosport session. Their national pullout. Nick loves a good pullout.
Well, clearly I don't. I have 4 children, you dumbass. No.
I had to work that in there again. That's what she said. We have a wins league table.
Yes.
But the one thing I did, it does ignore quite a few series. CNC heads, I noticed, which have big grids. Northern Saloons from the Darlington and District Motor Club, which have big grids. But it gave the explanation, okay, class starters of 6 or above couch as such, but if you're getting an overall win on a massive grid of 39 cars of varying different classes, surely that must deserve some recognition.
Yeah. So I mean, they've been doing it for years. They've just brought, I think in the publication in Autosport, I think they stopped doing it in 2014. Now they've brought it back. I was incredibly surprised that they were saying national racing, your club, you know, club level racers get your chance to be in it, and then you see the likes of Ash Sutton in there, and then you've got guys racing G55 Ginettas and Ginetta Junior lot, and you're thinking, that's not club level, it's not national level at all. And this is why, again, we wanted to get you on a bit, Ben, as well, because I know you're quite passionate about the stages and the tiers and the levels. But yeah, I just thought maybe we should start up our own one.
Well, there we go. I mean, it's the fact that they also raised the price to £11, and it was essentially the club racer that was buying the friggin' magazine in the first place that kept them going. But that's another thing. But again, Nick, you raised a very good point there, because in the top 40 of that list, there was races from the UK Porsche Carrera Cup club racing. GT Cup and British GT club racing. Ginetta Racing Drivers Club. Okay, gentlemen drivers, but factory Ginetta Series club racing. Historic F1 Masters. Club racing?
Historic F1. Fucking hell.
Something that's close to Ben's heart, because he tested to go into the series. VW Cup. Club racing?
Yeah. But that's what I mean. That's the next one up, isn't it? That would be your national level racing. Yeah? Would you agree? It's kind of...
Yeah. Definitely.
That's the next step up. But like we discussed last year at MSD, didn't we, Ben, about the fact that you got club racing here and then national levels over there. Like, unobtainable for a guy as successful as yourself, Ben. And there's just such a void, isn't there? And then to pull all these people into the same little championship. I get it's for a laugh. Don't get me wrong. If my name was on that list and I was there above Ash Sutton or one of the Porsche Carrera drivers, I'd be going, fuck you, boys. I'm much better than you. But as Ben put it early on, it would be a bit of a dick swinging exercise. But I don't know. I think there's people in there that shouldn't be on there.
Well, okay, he's obviously he's got the cash to do it, and he's probably a lovely bloke. But Lucky Carer races Carrera Cup and the Ferrari 488 Challenge. That's not Dave that's in his Fiesta in the garage on a Friday night. That's going to go to the top hatch on the Sunday.
He's definitely not in his garage building that by on his driveway.
And again, but Jonathan Bevan said it earlier. Club racing essentially is, okay, some people don't have the mechanical skill and knowledge to go, I'm going to prep this race car and I'm going to go racing. They need to pay it. And again, that puts money into club racing through these companies that do it. But
Totally understand that.
There we go. I mean, Phil Lee has commented, club racing should be specified as 10K all-in cost-wise or lower. I think 10K is a bit unrealistic, Phil, because I'll be honest, I've gone above that and I race a Ford Focus. I don't at the moment.
No, you don't. It's just a driveway queen.
It's a driveway queen. Well, I think you'll find the week after next, it's no longer going to be a driveway queen.
It's just a spitter with a Focus attached to it.
Exactly.
massive piece of plywood.
Exactly. I did move the splitter back after much piss taking, and to be honest, I have seen bigger splitters around various paddocks. So I will try and get some photographs to prove
it. It doesn't matter. I'm never going to forget version one, so it doesn't matter. You can take it off. I'm still going to hit the piss.
Fair enough. Was
there no rule?
With the series that I was running it in, I thought, okay, there's not much ruling there, but supposedly there is a blue book law that says it's got to be a certain diameter out from the car. So, you know, the problem is as well, the way I painted the edging and stuff like that, it looked bigger than what it was, and you know.
We are still talking about your splitter here, aren't we?
Back to the splitter. Jonathan Bevan has commented again, Ben's engine and box is more than 10 grand.
I think you need to come down to my workshop and have a look at it, because it's a freaking standard engine. This is the problem I've got. when you do well, you have people who try to peck at you the whole time, which is fine. Yeah. I can take it. But, you know, obviously they're not in the garage working with me and they're not stuff. And I know he's got an engine, small branch. He just had it built by Born or whatever it is and stuff. I'm building my own engine. In fact, I didn't even build this engine. Someone gave it to me in exchange for a K20 I gave him. So that engine has been running open.
Yours is the K24, isn't it? The Frank.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a K24 bottom end and a K20 top end. Standard cam, standard piston, standard rod, standard everything. I don't balance it. I don't mess around. I don't do anything. It's genuinely a scrapyard build. It's just that the K-Series engines are just God's gift to club racers. Because where else can you get a 2-4 bot engine, like 260 horsepower for... You know, if I had to build one at like that, it'd probably cost, the engine would cost 800 for the base K24. A K20 head is like, what, 400? Gaskets and stuff, sling it together, it's like, I don't know, $2,000-$2,500.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying that the Honda stuff is good. There's no denying that.
Gearbox-wise, I run a standard final drive out an EP3, so that didn't cost anything. And the only gears I changed on it was 4, 5, and 6. 1, 2, and 3 are completely standard. I even run a standard Honda clutch.
And it works well?
Yeah, yeah. There's no need to go spend bollock loads worth of money. The people who go spend shitloads of money, the people who aren't working on the rest of the car, i.e. the chassis, that's where everything else is. But then, you know, the easy thing to do is to go to your engine builder and say, like, I need another 20 horsepower. How much is it going to cost me? Oh, it's $7,000. Yeah, great. That'll get me up there, sort of thing. But that's been the story of club racing since it's existed. People go straight to the engine.
Power. I need power. Car understeers like a bitch, but more power.
Yeah, it weighs 1,200 kilos, but yeah, exactly.
Jonathan Bevan also commented on your earlier point, Ben. He agreed with you regarding too many championships and combined grids. He says, we can joke, but club racing is in trouble. Something has to be done.
It is. When I was racing the Metros, the numbers dropped towards the end, and I think they actually got yellow carded. And it's really sad because a championship that's been established like that for so long, where so many big names have gone through it and used it as their starting ground, and it's a genuinely good, it sounds stupid to say, but it's a genuinely good car because it's, the engines are, you know, super reliable. I never had a problem with an engine, never had a problem with a gearbox. The first engine I ever had blew up, but that's because I bought it with that engine in. You know, I've run the things, raced on them, and got fifth with no coolant in the blading. So whoever says K-Series Rover this time are bad, it's just, you know, they're slung together badly. But it's a shame that championships, established ones, are losing out to the lure of these new championships that basically provide exactly the same thing at a slightly higher cost. And they're just diluting the entire scene. Because, I mean, it just really doesn't need to happen that we need to poach and kill off these established good series for what, really? I mean, I just don't understand.
So the problem is we've got, there's a lot of people's agendas in there. There's a lot of clubs that want, you know, I'll use them as an example. You know, MSV have got the KAs. Obviously, BRSCC didn't have anything like that. So they've then done this City Cup, for instance. Mm. And again, the KAs didn't establish it. The C1s had already gone 2 CVs previous to that. So there's all these clubs trying to, as you've put, they're copying an idea, tweaking the rules a little bit. Mm. And then...
All for the money.
I mean, to be fair, for the C1s, what that was put together as, the 2CVs used to be the original from the 80s, the original, really, really cheap, buy one from a French farmer's field, stick a cage in it, go racing. And the problem is, because stuff got rare for it with the Belgian arms and everything, they kind of thought, okay, what's the sort of equivalent? And they got a niche with the C1s. Sort of slow, sling it together for a couple of grand and go and do a 24-hour race. And the problem is, it went boom very quickly. So
they had the right formula, didn't they? They super low spec, and you could build them for very, very cheap. And, you know, running around on wanky tires and wanky brakes with no power and stuff, and carrying on the 2CV sort of
ethos. Spirit,
that worked well. But like these other guys who are bringing in the same thing, which, you know, and they put sticky tires on them and bits and bobs and stuff, and it's kind of losing the point of having a slow, slippery, slipstreamy sort of car when you start bringing in things like that to it. But that C1 thing was right, but then it went crazy. And then it sort of lost the plot a bit, because when you started getting teams running them, and then you got these pros dropping in for a bit of a weekend, laugh. And then, which kind of kicks every club racer out of the scene a bit, because even though it's cheap racing, they're going to throw money at it. So it's cheap, but people always find ways to spend money and stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I can imagine. Just back to the comments there, chaps. Patrick Seal, maybe the MSA should introduce a max...
Good morning, Jack.
Maybe not.
Good morning.
I think it's a notice to tell me to shut up. Maybe the MSA should introduce a minimum entry number, so a minimum 25 to a 30-car grid. That forces one make series to bunch up. There kind of is already. I know there's one organising club that if you have a championship, you have to put up $5,000. And they basically say, right, you break even at 20 entries. If you don't make those 20 entries, we take the rest of it out of that pot. As soon as that pot gets empty, we put your grid where we can fit you in. Because at the end of the day, BRSCC, BARC, MSV, they're all businesses. And again, we said with Corona, shit's getting tighter. It's a lot more penny pinching is going to be going on. And a lot of these clubs are now being run as a business. So maybe that as well is where we're going to see changes moving forward. I've just lost my page there. Looking at more comments. Cameron Tunio, numbers are down this year as COVID, although agreed too many championships. Yeah, there is. But then at the same time, there's a lot of championships that are still thriving. So it's not all bad news, I think. It's not right at baseline this year. Yeah, we can agree with that. Maybe it's a gimme, but you still need to look at some series and go, because there are still some series that are doing bad this year that have been doing bad for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
They just haven't, to put it, I don't want to sound wrong when I say this, they haven't been killed yet. Neil Ashcroft, we all know dilution is hurting grid. So what's your view on how to stop the dilution?
Well, we've just been talking about
As I've said in the past, I genuinely think, although everybody, all the clubs, as you say, are separate businesses, I think you just got to take it on the chin a little bit. When you go, I want to set up this series, someone should be there saying, no, we've already got that over there. Sorry, you're not having it.
Unfortunately, it's going to fall down to the club races to do that, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, or this is where MSE need to step in and be like, no, we've got that kind of series already. Move along. Think of something new, something innovative, something different. Not the same copy and paste rules and regs from there over there. Yeah.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Because actually, quite funnily enough, you say copy and paste, but when the Castle Coon Hot Hatch regs came out in their new format, I was reading them and it was quite funny because they literally did press cut, copy and paste of the 750 regulations. And why should I know that? Because I helped fucking write them. That's finest. Yeah. But it is a problem that, unless you really get someone with a gavel going down and saying, if you can patent ideas, then why can't you license or patent, apart from MX5s, which there are 9 million of those things racing, you probably have to stretch them across three clubs. But if someone's got a BMW M3 championship of certain spec or whatever, then that's it. That club's got it. You come up with something else. Someone's got to turn around and go to the other club like, no, we don't need another one of those. Go with
Jesus. Yeah.
Well, Jonathan Bevan has commented again, it's down to the MSA as they issue the series permits. So, it's the MSA. Yeah. Which, and again, playing devil's advocate, their hands are probably tied sporting fairness and they have to be seen to give it a fair shout to everything.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? Their hands need to be untied. It's unfortunately, you've got to just say no at some point. Yes. It's okay to say no, kids. It's okay to say no.
There we go. Ben Wood. Hi, Ben. Sorry I'm late. We'll watch from the start later. Can't beat a K-Series engine. They're solid and so reliable. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of club racers out there that are racing Hondas for a reason.
Are you sure he's not talking about the Rover?
Ah, the Rover engine, sorry. I thought he was all about the K20s.
I don't know which one he's talking about either.
Right, so we had Neil Ashcroft's comments. Philip Lee, I think the most frustrating thing is that when they deliberately make it incomparable with the other series, both UK C1-esque series are still different regs-wise, and then you've got the European Championships doing the same thing and the regs are different there too.
Yeah.
I know Belgium have got a massive C1 series, haven't they?
That's
so.
What I said when that C-car came off.
You should be able to lift it out of that and put it in this series if you wanted to.
If you wanted a sprint race, if you wanted a 20-minute race in a C1 you already got, then sure, you drop in and do a bit of stuff, you know, because they're not encroaching on the endurance scene. But you can't.
No. A
whole other freaking car just to do that, so it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And again, Neil Ashcroft backs up that point. Philip Lee makes a good point. All these series differentiate their regs, so you can't build a car that fits across a number of series. Frustrating. Yeah, I know there's a number of changes that need to be made to make a C1 go from that to that. But there we go. Again, that's what this show's about. We're just talking about everyone's opinions and putting them together on this format. Andy Faraday, when you get people entering TCR cars in a club-level event, it is no longer club-level. What's your thoughts?
I did wonder on that because there's a lot of these TCR cars cropping up because the rules allow them to turn up. That's a serious bit of kit. How much does it cost for one of those?
About 50, 60 grand if you find a
Exactly. Yeah. So but that's...
In the same breath, in the absolute... I can understand what you're saying. Buying a factory car, factory-built car, isn't club motorsport. But the way club motorsport is going now, unless you're racing... Saxos or whatever, you know, if you go out and build yourself a fast E46 or something like that, you're going to be knocking on 50 grand easy, you know.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, not like a spec one which uses like Taiwanese suspension and all the cheap fudge stuff. You're building a proper car, it's going to cost you 50, 60. So when you look at the cost of a TCR car, you go, okay, I'll buy it 50, 60. It's actually cheap because it's been tested to death, all the specs. Setup is well known about them and they're relatively cheap to run. So when you get it out on track compared to something that you're honing and breaking down you the whole time and you're doing engines, it's a standard engine, it's a standard box, it's some fancy bodywork and it's some sorted suspension and big brakes, you know, which you have to do on any car. So yes, I agree, it's not really club racing, but when you stack it up cost wise, it does make sense to buy TCR cars for those endurance races. It does actually work out quite cheap to be at the front in a TCR car.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
It didn't for someone the other day at Alton Park.
Well, yeah.
That's because he came up against an EP3 and they're just unbeatable.
There we go. So, again, guys, just going back to the topic there, okay? So, what is club racing? We're looking for a level. So, you would say there's top national, and then club level. So, what series would you put where? Would you say anything on the Toker and the British GT package would be top end national?
100%.
It's on national TV. You ain't club racing, mate. Period.
Yeah. No.
Apart from the odd drop in series that does quite well.
Yeah. Apart from like the
Meagre. Oh yeah, but
that's club racing.
That format's brilliant because it shows people, race fans, that club racing does happen on your doorstep, and so many people just don't know about it. So I love it. I love it when they do that.
Yeah.
It does. In my opinion, it doesn't happen enough. There should be a guest slot in every single BTCC race weekend. But
well, I don't know if you saw at the weekend, Nick. Again, in Australia, they had the main supercars on at Townsville, but one of their support races was the Hyundai XLs, which is over here would be the Hyundai Accent. And again, it's spec racing on Nankang tyres and not much you have to do to them. And that was on Fox Sports on a national platform. And they were going
That's it. That kind of stuff should happen a bit more. But going back to the previous comment, I mean, like I said, there's tons of series. We'll have to make a... Because I want to make that... I'd love to put together the perfect, like, club racing ladder that then becomes the national, that then becomes the higher level. I mean, Ben, we've said it already, but you fell foul of it being top level club racer. I mean, if you were racing this year in the Honda, you'd be top of that list right now, wouldn't you? Mr. Win every race, but obviously you've then gone to make the next step up, but the void was humongous. So there needs to be that middle gap, I think.
Frankly absurd. Going to national racing is three house deposits. So it is pretty stupid the amount of money you have to pay an outfit to run a car you don't own for a couple of plastic cups. If you were the superstar of the series and you're winning every race and it moved you up to the next sort of series, money well spent. If you're, like you say, and also ran running around the back, those sort of bills must be an absolute kick in the gut.
So what was it you went for, Ben? So tell us a bit more about what you went for and what costs were involved and how close you were to getting there, if you can.
Well, I was at MSD and I got talking to the one of the guys who owns one of the cars that PMR runs, and I kind of, he was an absolutely lovely bloke, and I feel kind of sorry for like maybe messing him around a bit. But he sort of presented an offer on the table, and I went up and met the PNR people, and we organised a test, and it cost very little to do because he was helping me out. He wanted to see me out there. But unfortunately, during the first discussions, it was like, we'll help you out, we'll do a deal. And there's lots of social media crap involved. We were going to do a mini documentary series with proper production and go through the steps of, what it took to get, talking to sponsors, open book everything, how you talk to sponsors, where you're going to get the funds to start racing, how you develop the car to be competitive. Because to be honest, the car that I was going to drive wasn't a race-winning car. So they needed that to be involved. So we had this whole sort of plan going on, and it was going to cost this much for them to help us out. And then the second discussion, it was this cost. And then, by the time it came to, need to start, I said, you need to give me a final number. It was very hard for me to get a final number because they knew the final number was going to be like this, and they just didn't really want to say it to me because they knew, I just couldn't afford it. So I just had to say, thanks, but, I'm out, which is disappointing because it would have been really fun. I don't know really what that, in hindsight, that money would have done for me because it wouldn't have been, if I'm spending 45 grand. To go race a car, I know I can't win it. It's like for a club racer, is that value? Just because stepping up, does it make that step worthwhile? And in this case, no. So I'm kind of lucky it worked out the way it did. Otherwise, I would have just spunked a load of money and not got anywhere.
Yeah.
The problem is, if you are, for example, a good club racer and you make a step international, you've got a lot of eyes from the club scene going like, a lot of people want to go how good is he against, real pros?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out, out of blood to who want to sit there and go like, oh, I told you he was shit, There's a lot of people who want to, they want to see
but
fail.
You say that, but I bet there was also a lot of people that wanted to see you succeed. I know I was one of the ones that wanted to see you do well in that championship.
Exactly.
I'm very lucky. Have loads of support, and the amount of support I get from social media is absolutely insane. And the amount of people who say they've started racing just from watching videos and being things like, I must be like well into the dozens now. People who have messaged me say, I've started racing just because of
well into the dozen,
which in itself is quite a rewarding outcome of doing what I do. I don't know. That's why I'm going into historics a bit now. Historics is sort of like, it runs a level up above club racing, but it's not national racing. And you can still, ships impossible to get nowadays. Like, it's proper sponsorship. You see people getting sponsorship, but every time you start talking money about how much you're actually getting and stuff and how they're working it out, no one's handing out a pile of cash. Whereas club racing, historic racing, if you're good and you just actually got talent, owners will put you in the car and run you and cover costs. You literally turn up and all you're paying is accommodation for yourself. And that is that's what it should be. That's what, proper sponsorship and support should be, sort of thing. Rather than killing your soul. Because the amount of time I was putting in to do what I call micro sponsors of my sort of car, I had loads of great companies I was working with. But but you know, they can't put in a lot of money. But the amount of effort I'm putting in to negotiate sort of things, I'm like, you know, if I just work these extra hours on a second job or overtime, I'm
you'll get that money.
Yeah, it's insane how much time you have to put into it. So.
And the problem is that in itself becomes a full-time job, and it's, you know, trying to, I mean, look at what we do constantly on the social media stuff. It takes so much time out your day.
I know, and we you know, for example, there's four of us on the screen and there's three people off screen running the bloody thing.
I
was like, who are these guys, you know? So it's incredible amount of work to keep on top of everything like you guys do, with keeping your eye on all these series and all these people. It's a full time freaking job trying to do it, which a lot of people just don't understand how much time you have to put into what your passion is.
It's a labor of love, I would think.
If anyone wants to sponsor us for our labor of love, then please do get in touch.
Everyone's got a pile of the cash just laying around. Send them over.
To be fair, I mean, I would have thought club racing was like that in the 80s. You had stuff like the Honda Civic Series and stuff that you could get. You know, James Thompson, for instance, he started out in a Honda Civic VTI, you know, the Castrol Challenge, and they, you know, they would go to the Jim Russell Racing School and they would, you know, faff around there. You know, there was a lot more scholarships and stuff back then. For the club racer now, it's a lot more difficult, I would think.
It's a hobby and it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, it's a hobby and a bit of fun. And again, like Ben's pointed out, you're going from there to there. And unless you've got a backer that just wants to throw money, or you've got some serious wedge behind you yourself, or a very understanding sponsor, it's going to be another climb.
I mean, it's definitely wedge. I mean, you know, Ben, you saying about stepping into just the PMR run car. You see it at the top level, BTCC. How many people like are fighting at the back of the grid, pouring in thousands of pounds to be pootling around at the back in like 20th? But you know, because it's the main stage, they want to get themselves involved with it. You know, Ben, at your the next level you wanted to do, you could pour all that money in, and again, TV time and things like that, you get what, a little snippet every couple of months, if that.
Yeah, and TV so, really now doesn't really mean anything anyway.
No, that's it. So even stepping up to the big stuff, it's not viable.
Yeah, we're going back to some comments for a second. Sam Tompkins, he keeps on commenting this. He just wants us to cover this quickly. Forget about how many series there are for a second. Okay, well, we're off that topic now. What's your view on this? Under current MSA, UK club races can only bring two people at the moment and no spectators. I know it's regulations at the moment and the circuits have to abide them. It's just a kick in the teeth for racers, if I'm honest. It's one of the reasons I haven't raced this year, not being able to bring a decent amount of people with me, and no spectators doesn't work for my main sponsors who I rely on to be able to race.
No, that's unfortunately a COVID-induced kick in the nuts, isn't it? It's,
And it does, like the table you were talking about before, it does kind of skew it, because there are people who just can do the volume of races, and because half the people aren't turning up, can get a win. And by virtue of that, they're at the, you know, on near the tops of these leaderboards. I'm not taking away from them, but I just meant, like, it skews everything, because these some people who, like, you know, are genuinely fast, who just either can't be bothered to turn up this year because it's a washout, or can't afford it, or, you know, they would go with their family, but they're not allowed to bring it, so it's like, oh, what's the point? I don't want to go do it by myself, sort of thing, because people do both. Then, yeah, it does make it difficult, whereas some people will just go do the racing no matter what. But funny you say that, because, like, a lot of the races I've been to and stuff, like, that's not been to adhere to at all, anyway.
No.
No, I mean, I was at my last race in my camp, I had 8 people.
8 people in just your camp, yeah.
It was a two-driver event, so, like, you give a little bit for that, but, you know, they've given us 6 tickets. It's more than the two. Oh, no, that actually worked out that now. The same as what you said, sorry. But, I think someone hit him before the mother going through the door. But I love it, I mean what can you do? You can't argue with it, and you're kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, as we found, you've got some people that are just going out and racing because they've been locked up, and you know, quite frankly, this year's been completely shit. And there is other people that unfortunately are sitting it out, you know, like Sam there, without sponsors being there to see it and do it like that. Unfortunately, you know, that's unfortunately how 2020 has rolled. I think it's, my personal view, I think it's bullshit and we should just get the fuck on with it now, but...
Next scientific view on the situation.
Just they were going on about it again today, and I get it is a real thing, but come on.
Right, we'll stop the debate there, because it's, if you churn on the BBC News now, it's going on that side. So if you are interested in the COVID debate, bugger off somewhere.
Yeah.
Back to some comments. Okay, Philip Lee, stuff like Hot Hatch and Coombe Saloon.
Yeah, loads of comments. Stop
it. Oh, loads, mate. It's fantastic tonight. Thank you, everyone, for getting your comments in. So stuff like Hot Hatch and Coombe Saloon should sit at the top end of club racing, but still some serious money goes into that. Then you have the oddities like Mallox or the Midget Series, for example. Where do you put them? Motorsport UK should set out a tier system on cost of racing in that series and the routes that would ideally lead you into next. Could offer race entry discounts for the next step up on the ladder for the driver that wins the series below it. What do you think?
Nail on the head.
Yeah.
Not bad.
That's a nail on the head there.
We're complaining already about the cost of the license fees going on. Imagine how much it would be if you had to bring in three more people to do that and the things and the sponsor and everything like that. Like, you always have someone whinging somewhere about something.
But it'd be money well spent just to...
I don't think they'd be able to keep on top. Okay. We're quite lucky that England or the UK is like the mecca of club motorsport. Like, we have more racing here than anywhere else in the world in terms of like the saturation we got per capita. And that's circuit. You know, you and I can travel to any circuit, like 2 hours, any direction. We've got like, you can stumble across two circuits sort of thing.
Where the fuck do you live? Every circuit from me is a million miles away.
Where do you live?
Down in Sunny Pool.
that's the problem. I'm North London. Anyway, so but you look at Australia, and they don't have anywhere near as much.
They don't, and it's quite divided down into state level, isn't it? They have separate series for separate states, and then you have supercars.
Yeah, but that means the people who can't, like that Jordan Fox kid stuff, you know, when you get those cheaper series tacking onto the back of a large major series and stuff, it makes it quite viable for what would be the average
club race
to do that. And they
absolutely.
They just don't have as much else going on, so they can pump it onto your national TV. And they all, you know, Australia lives after their sportsmen quite well, whereas here it's sort of like, you know, we're not even an after.
We'll put you over here.
I think the closest thing we got to a minute is the mini challenge, isn't it? In tier system and getting to the mainstream, but I'm still sure that the jump from, is it the Cooper class up to the JCW class is still going to be absolutely massive.
It's astronomical. That said, at least it gives you the opportunity to maybe get noticed in Cooper class or the lower class. Because although we say about sponsorship, there is still people out there that talent spot, you know. And if look at this Harry King, current Porsche driver, started in Ginetta Juniors, and obviously he's being picked up quite nicely because not only is he a mega driver, but he's worked his way up Ginetta Juniors, G55s, up to Porsches. We just need that a bit lower down the ladder.
Even the Ginettas are still need a lot of money to go running the Ginetta Juniors and things like that. Then it's still not accessible to.
No.
Well, that half.
But you've also
have someone run you. It's always no one's turning up and running a car. I mean, you can go buy a Porsche Carrera Cup car if you want it. Whether or not you'd have any success running it or not is a different issue. But if you were savvy enough, there's nothing saying you couldn't. But paying these outfits, obviously, they make a you know, a living out of it. It's their job and stuff like that. But, you know, it's the majority of the cost, you know. For you to drive your car, whether it's a Ginetta or a Porsche, you got 2 to 4 mechanics trailing around you every freaking minute of the day. It's a horrific amount of money to spend. But again, it's something you have to do to operate at that level.
1 minute, guys. I'll be back in a second.
Carry on.
Nick's disappearing. Nick's
disappearing. Tom's got a smaller bladder than me for once.
I was going to say. Sam Tompkins has apologised. No need to apologise about that. So there's actually a few people that agree with you. Jonathan Bevan, paddock's full of people. I've seen it as well. It's where it is. Cameron Tunio, sponsorship, work harder. Okay, that's in peaks and troughs. It is what it is. I mean, to be honest, there's a few people I know that literally race just off sponsorship, and they're bloody good at it, and I respect them for it. But like, my car is from, you know, my biggest sponsor is Overtime.
Yeah.
that's my biggest sponsor, and Bank of NatWest. After I paid the bills, I'm allowed to put bits towards a race car. And it's going to be the same for 99.9% of the club races out there. James Walsh, Ben has been my hero since Time Attack entry at Brands Hatch. Biggest troll job ever. They had no idea. Driver versus wallet was on display.
Yeah, that was a bit of a pass. That was not no idea why I was sitting there and how chose Brands because it wasn't really a power circuit and stuff. But it did alright. I was most annoyed with the stupid little caveats they put in everything. So I spoke to the organizer and I said, I want to come do this one round. What do I need to do? He says, I need to do this, this, and this, and this. I had to put lights on the car. I had to buy their tires. For some reason, they have to run a second seat in the car. And they seemed most scrutineering. They weren't interested in my fire safety systems or anything like that. They were interested in the material of my wheel nuts and whether my stickers were in the right place. But, you know, that just shows you how money set up. You know, it's not just a bad series. It's, I don't fit into it very well. It's not for me. But my real bugbear was that they made you do all these changes and spend all this money. And then I think we got third. And then when I got called, they're like, oh, you're late to the podium. So I went there. And I wasn't allowed to stand on the podium because technically I wasn't a full-time Time Attacker. So the third place I earned was handed across. And I got a pat on the back and a special plastic cup saying, you're the fastest non-Time Attacker here today. Something. I said, if I'd known that, I would have run my whole tires. I wouldn't have bothered with your regs and stuff because I'm not going to fit into your class structure to get on the podium. I would have just run my car as it is and picked up like 2 seconds. And then really annoyed everyone. But it's just a thing you have to pay for you have to sign up the whole season to be allowed to step on the podium, which just doesn't make any sense because you would have thought Time Attack would have had a bunch of local specialists that just want to drop into their local circuit and have a bit of laugh and be able to rinse the guys who do it there.
The big boys.
Yeah,
and girls.
They kind of prefer that now.
Okay, so that was your experience of Time Attack, Ben. I want to move you back. So we want to sort of go over your racing career. So you started off, I believe, in MG Metro Cup.
As a championship, yeah. My first ever race in the UK was in MGB. Because like most people, I started off just doing track days and track days and track days and track days and track days. And then track days get boring. You're just going around and you're going around and you're out there for 20 minutes and you're going, yeah, it's kind of boring now. Something else I'd love to do. So a good mate of mine that I met at uni said, I've just built an FIA MGB. He stuck me in it. I had to hurriedly get my license and everything. And it was for the MGB 50th anniversary race series thing. We did the first race and stuff like that. And got pole straight off the bat with a normal sticker on. And that was a good experience. But I took a small break from that and then decided I was actually in the doldrums. I was I'd lost my job, or rather I quit, because the MGB race, I was racing my boss's son at the time, and he didn't like getting beaten, so I got fired. So I was in the doldrums a bit, you know, walking around the countryside, waving my willy at things because I was so bored and I didn't have another job. And my dad actually saw that I was, you know, losing a bit of direction. So he said, what do you want to do? I don't know. You did some racing with your mate, did work, you know, did pretty well with it. What can we do? So I looked around for a championship that was really cheap. And one of the things I really looked at was clean racing, because I couldn't afford to race fix any car that I did get. And that was the Metros. And he helped me get a Metro. I think he picked up our Metro for like £2,600. So it was dirt cheap. I had the gear already, literally, you know, wrapped it in vinyl, did a bit of sprucing up and went out racing and stuff. And, you know, the first year is a learning curve, as it always is. And then second year, third year, you get your head down and you start going properly.
Yeah.
But it's a great experience. And if anyone wants to get into racing, that's the sort of place you really need to start with. You know, nothing too expensive, nothing too complicated. But these family-based championships that have been around for ages, that are super welcoming. The cars aren't difficult to work on. Parts are everywhere. You know, that's really what drew me to it. And it sort of just grew from there, really.
Okay. So where did the Integra come in?
Oh, I got bored of Metros. because you go to top. And it's
I know that feeling.
But and I was looking around. Actually, no, I was racing with. We dropped in with a 750 at Cadwell Park, and I was doing the Metro race, and I saw the hot hatches go around, and they had those Fiestas, the two Fiestas going around, three Fiestas, and they were, you know, like sequential boxes, and they were fucking blindingly quick, like 285 horse. I thought, Christ, they are mini touring cars. I want a piece of that. So I looked around at what I could get for the money that I had to compete with these like 50 grand little mini touring cars. And I stumbled across a basically finished project, which was the Integra with the K20 in it. And I'd seen someone else on YouTube, these two other YouTube sort of guys, Danny DZ2 and Josh Lawton. They were hammering around Cadwell Park on a track day in their K-Swaps. And they were like a second or two off the pace of these race cars. I thought, well, Christ almighty, I think that's the package to go for. So got the car, and it was just literally, it wasn't because I love Hondas or anything like that. It was just that it was the best piece, the best tool for the job, the best formula for the least money that you could go do it. But it just worked out that, as I developed over the years, the thing is what it can achieve with, you know. Yes, if someone wanted me to build it, I think someone asked me like, how much would it cost to build that car as a replica, and I think it did work out for like 50 grand. But that's only because they get a DC2 that's not rusty nowadays. It's like 12 to 14 grand to start with. It's not
like grand. Honda tax!
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. Once you start going to a certain speed, things get expensive. Lap times cost money. There's no way around it, really.
Okay. We have actually got some footage of yourself on board another beautiful racing machine. If we could just play that.
Oh, did you see that? Two cars through Cascades, no trouble.
No comment.
Yeah, no.
Yes. keep stirring, Stefan. So, Ben, that was you in the Guards Trophy a couple of weeks ago at Alton Park.
Yeah. Alton Park Guards Trophy Chevron is my, what's that, kryptonite. Nothing works out at Alton Park Chevron. fourth year on the trot, we just failed to... No, 1 year we finished the race, it was all right, we got third, but the rest of them, it's just always been some sort of catastrophic failure.
There's always that one track, isn't there? I didn't get on very well with Alton every time I've been there.
Something about it. Something about it. But yeah, it was 2 weeks ago, something like that. First race of the season. I haven't been in the car since... What a tail end of last year, sort of thing. So it was nice to get out in something, and especially something that you built from the ground up. Like, I'm literally going through everything on that car, every nut, bolt, washer, like, properly. Gone through that car, and it took the best part 6 months to do it. So it was nice to get out, and it ran good apart from when it didn't.
Sounded good. I want to know how's the Integra Super Touring upgrade going?
That's all right. I've been pledged sponsorship to finish that for next year. I put a hold on it this year because there was just no point in me rushing it for this year. I'd rather just slower and make sure it's right. It's got the new cage in, and it's sitting on a few new bits and bobs and stuff, but the big money comes with now. I actually do have to build an engine and a gearbox and a new fuel system because my old one only held 23 litres and stuff, so I can't do too many.
That thing's going to be an animal. Are you still planning on going to Thunder with it, or are you...
Yeah, I mean, that's the only real place I think I can fit it. I don't know where else you can stick a hot hatch. And the target is to do 50-51s around Brand. And I don't know what hot hatch you'd really, where you would stick a hot hatch that does that. I don't know.
Enduro KA.
Enduro KA,
obviously.
I would think something like that. You're looking at, Thunder Saloons or CNMC Super Saloons, something with the big beasties.
What I was looking at, and it's great because it brings you back into everyone's like, oh, you know, he's so fast because his car is what it is, really, which is fine. Everyone says, you know, you always get that sort of stigma after a while. But it'd be nice to go back to a series where you're the underdog again, where you're not in a 500 horsepower V8 or a monstrous turbocharged something or whatever. And they raced there last time at Brands, even though there was that, dubious accident on the start-finish line. It just proves that a small, lightweight, 2 liter sort of car, the Alpha, could take on the big boys quite well in a circuit which doesn't require legs. Unfortunately, it ended how it did, but I thought that was a cracking display of David and Goliath sort of esque. But those big V8 supercars, they don't half lurch around the place when they're trying to, you know, go in between the corners, sort of thing. So.
And you'll just be darting up through.
Well, you'd bounce off them sort of thing, wouldn't you?
True.
I was going to say, the big old V8 beasties, you wouldn't have much chance if you went panel to panel with them.
No, definitely not. But, you know, it looks like a cool place. There's not many other places to go. And the Integra now is becoming more of a technical exercise than an out-and-out, you know, not club race machine, but you know, it's so out of sorts now, there's not a place to do with it. So that's why I'm moving into the historic side of things, because it sort of fits my what I enjoy a bit more.
Okay.
And the scene is a bit more relaxed, and people do care about their cars sort of a bit more. Yes, they are, you know, they are. When you start talking about a TCR car, is that club racing at 50, 60 grand? And then you stand up next to someone who's got an FIA Mini up for sale for 50 to 60 grand. You know, you look at the scale of what people are talking about value-wise and stuff, and a TCR car looks like absolutely fucking phenomenal value when you stand it next to an FIA Mini, which we're actually racing, as long as it finishes up the test day, all right. The next Guards Trophy race at Silverstone, I'll be doing the Chevron and an FIA Mini in the touring car race, which would be my first.
No mini way.
Race. Yeah. So on the same day, two qualities, two races, a Mini and a Chevron. So I don't know how you could get further apart car-wise. But that should be quite exciting, because I've never driven a Mini, and everyone's always telling me how awesome they are. The guy who's built it, which was the guy who built the MGB, the first thing I think, he hates Minis now, having built one. Absolutely hates them. He'll never build another one again.
Fair play, yeah.
My one, taking you away from back from the historics, Ben, my one memory of you, I went to watch the Barcelones, would probably be last year, and you joined in with the Honda VTEC Challenge for the day. I popped down and said hello to you in the paddock, but I remember watching you in the first race there because I believe you were warming up the tyres on the first lap and spun.
Not the first lap, so, the first corner.
That was the first corner on the warm-up lap. Everyone went round. I'm stood in the grandstand. What's he doing? And there's Ben, and he comes up the back, then drives up the grass and takes his spot on the front row. And I thought, he's going to get a penalty for that. So takes off. Massive scrap between yourself and Craig Rayner in his Mark II Escort. Fantastic battle. You've got the best of him and pulled the legs away. You got a 10-second penalty and still won by half a second.
Yeah, I think it was 11 seconds. That was. I didn't know we got a penalty at the time and stuff. Had I known, I wouldn't have let up quite as much to have such a small margin. But that was a thoroughly, thoroughly exciting race. Because that, again, was the whole David versus Goliath thing. You know, like you work your ass off on the infield and then you get to the main straight and 500 horsepower will go thundering past you again and you just be like, oh, fuck's sake, do it all over again. And it was sort of just about trying to learn that one little change you had to make to just get that gap that he wasn't going to get past you down on the straight again. And funnily enough, I watched that Metro racing. And one of the great things I learned off Mike Williams. Sorry. His name didn't escape me. He was the master of fucking up your race. Like, good guy and stuff. But fucking yeah. He had a glove box full of tricks of how to keep you behind. Like, I remember at the final year of racing Metros, we were racing there, it was me and him. He was in front. I was half a second a lap faster than him. Every single lap, half a second a lap. If I got clear, it would have been a bit more. But I could not get past him for love and money because he was just deploying all these little tiny tricks, like going into a corner, you know, he'd brake and then let off the brakes. And just as you're about to get on the brakes again, he'd just stab the brake, tiny bit. And you get off, and he'd know he's doing it, so he gets straight on the gas, and he's a second gone again. So you've got two laps to catch him up again. Going into corners, he'll do like a tiny little double turn in or something like that, and just really cut your line and everything. He's an absolute master at it. And, you know, it's the first time I experienced that sort of, you know, someone driving in their mirrors that hard and winning a race by not being the fastest guy on track. And it was, you know, it was like a little masterclass, as much as I hated it at the time, sort of thing. You take those sort of
it taught you some good things,
like back then I was trying to be the gentleman, no rubbing, no this and that, no clean overtakes and stuff, and now it's kind of like, oh, just, you got to be a bit of a dick sometimes.
Check.
And on that note, I think with Ben we'll end it there with the wise old words, you have to be a dick sometimes.
Yep.
We just want to move on to Steph and Nick because we have some competitions, don't we, sirs?
We do.
As always.
As okay. always. Race on UK competitions.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So our current competition at the moment, we are going to be rounding up fairly soon, which is the Wired GoPro competition.
Wired Remote GoPro competition.
Yeah, that one. So you can win 250. That's the one. Look at that.
Yeah.
So you can win all of that. And for our listeners, you have to watch it back to see it. But you'll win a GoPro, the intercom cable, the buttons, the wire control, and an SD card, which is £250 worth of kit. So GoPro 4, it's a Hero 4, I think it is. So yeah, 250 quid worth of kit. And all you have to do is sign up and be a member to be entered into that competition. But I think we're going to probably put two. I think we'll probably announce it on our next podcast, the winner.
Yeah.
So we'll probably see two more weeks of that one, and then we'll put that one to bed and do another competition.
Yeah.
There we go. Any more chaps?
Oh yeah, you've got the HRX one, Nick.
Am I doing that one as well? Am I?
Yeah, you might as well.
Okay. Well.
I can't remember.
All right, so the current, we've got another one with HRX at the moment, which is the Save of the Year the top of the paddock, our little group, there is a pinned post. If you have had a bit of a brown trouser moment this year, and it has to be this year, okay? We're getting a lot of entries from previous years, but it's for this year only. Just submit it, and then good old Mr. Ben Edwards from Formula One's Channel 4's Formula One channel will be announcing the winners probably later on in the year once all the racing's finished, to give everyone a chance to have some sketchy moments. But yeah, if you've got a video or something like that, just post it up in the group and you can win a set of HRX Nomex underwear.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
There we go. Don't see that every day.
I'm going to join the squad now.
Jonathan,
I'm gonna get my year subscription, so you guys run a great gig. So
you guys yes!
Fantastic. There we go. So Ben Rushworth, he pays for his membership as well, boys and girls. It is worth it. I pay for it as well. So does Stefan. So does Nick. It all comes together, and we've got some great prizes for club racing.
This is it. And you get loads of discounts off many companies now as well.
Exactly.
Help towards your motorsport.
All of which can be found on the Club Racing UK website. So don't forget that, boys and girls. Just back to some comments quickly. Yeah. Francis Simpson. Ben is a big inspiration to a lot of us. His time and knowledge is very valuable, and his YouTube channel is a personal inspiration of mine.
Yeah. Jonathan, why did you start putting your intercom in your car and making videos of you talking going around?
Because getting sponsorship was pretty difficult. So I was thinking ways like, what's niche? What can I say I do that no one else does? And it's just what I popped. Because everyone was vlogging at the time. I was like, I ain't going to stand around outside. I hate holding a camera to myself and talking to you. But I don't mind doing it when I'm not paying attention to it. And I got a helmet on and I'm driving and I can talk absolute crap. So that was all right. And it worked out. And, you know, it's mostly just a bit of fun. Not so much sponsorship anymore.
It's brilliant.
It's a great idea.
This is brilliant.
Permission on something, or you can veto something, and I've got to stick to it because it's now out of the public domain. But I was going to, about a year and a half ago, start up a podcast, but I just haven't as well because just no time or anything yet, and the people I do live so far apart. But, and I've got emails of this with projected name stuff, I was going to call it Racing Club. you got to veto it now. Oh, look at that. Come on. Stunned silence.
Not at all. This is our gig, boyo.
All right.
You just have to come on. You'll have to just come on and you'll have to come back again, won't you?
I'd love to come back. I love shooting the shit. Good.
Yeah, it's cool.
Definitely, Ben, you will be on the returns list. That is for sure. So, is that everything, gents?
I think that's, yeah. That was a good one because my battery's dying or has died, and I had to go and get electricity.
Nick's battery died. We leave a last comment from Jonathan Bevan. I have to say, I love watching Ben's videos. Fancy letting him have a go in my car sometimes. That lovely DC5 that Jonathan Bevan runs, Ben.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that lovely MP's building.
There we go. Club Racing UK becomes historic matchmaker there this evening.
That ink is gorgeous, by the way. So, yeah, very
fantastic. Good. Well, Ben, thank you very much for coming on. It's been absolutely fantastic to chat shit and talk club racing as we normally do. And with that, the two gentlemen above me, Stefan Marsh, Nick Holmes, the man beside me, our guest tonight, Ben Rushworth, and from me, Robert Lewis, good night. God bless.
See you later, guys.
Yeah.